call you safe, okay? So make sure you wear a mask when you're going out and protect yourself from this pandemic, which isn't totally over just yet. I'm Nikki Strong, and this is VOA1, The Hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Mario Ritter Jr. and Alice Bryant. Later, Kelly Jean Kelly will present the series America's Presidents. But first, researchers are in a hurry to develop an effective vaccine against the new coronavirus. As the race intensifies, wealthy countries are placing orders for the treatment before it is even approved. They will be among the first to get what is likely to be a limited supply of the vaccine. This leaves questions about whether developing nations will get any vaccines in time to save lives. The COVID-19 pandemic has affected 188 countries and territories. By June 18th, the disease had affected nearly 8.4 million people and caused about 450,000 deaths. The World Health Organization has prepared a list of nearly 140 efforts to develop effective treatments and vaccines for the virus. The list includes 11 vaccine candidates undergoing human trials in China, Britain, and the United States. The tests involve products from drug makers like AstraZeneca, Pfizer, Inovio, and Moderna. Health experts have advised the public not to expect an effective vaccine until early next year. Britain and the U.S. have spent millions of dollars on vaccine candidates, including one being developed by AstraZeneca and the University of Oxford. In return, both countries are expected to get the vaccines, if approved, before others. The British government said that if the University of Oxford vaccine proves effective, the first 30 million doses would be for Britons. Separately, AstraZeneca signed deals to make at least 300 million doses available for the U.S. and another 400 million for European Union members. South African President Cyril Ramaphosa is pushing for scientific research to be shared between countries. He says, "Nobody should be pushed to the back of the vaccine queue because of where they live or what they earn." Ramaphosa currently chairs the African Union. He joined more than 140 world leaders and health experts last month in calling on all countries to unite behind a people's vaccine against COVID-19. They say the vaccine should be made available to anyone around the world at no cost. Earlier this month, the United Nations and other groups declared it was a moral imperative that everyone have access to a people's vaccine. The groups included the International Red Cross and Red Crescent. But such declarations are unenforceable. Yuan Chenghu works as a legal and policy advisor at the aid group Doctors Without Borders. She noted, "We have this beautiful picture of everyone getting the vaccine, but there is no roadmap on how to do it." The Associated Press reported her comments. At a meeting with African leaders this week, Chinese President Xi Jinping announced that African countries would be among the first to be helped with a vaccine developed by China. But he offered no plan to back up his statement. One of the efforts to ensure developing countries will get COVID-19 vaccines comes from the Vaccine Alliance, Gavi. Seth Berkley, the head of Gavi, said, "One thing that has been made all too clear is that this disease does not respect borders, which is why this global problem requires a global solution." The alliance and its partners signed an agreement with AstraZeneca for 400 million doses by the end of 2020. The company says it will make the vaccine available at no profit during the pandemic. And it has also given permission to India's Serum Institute to produce another 1 billion doses. The WHO has asked drug manufacturers to suspend intellectual property rights and share information on COVID-19 vaccines. But the drug industry is opposed to the idea. Arzu Ahmed is with Britain's Nuffield Council on Bioethics. She warned that we can't just rely on goodwill to ensure access. She added that it took 10 years for the HIV/AIDS drug to reach people in lower-income countries. UNAIDS chief Winnie Byanyima said African nations have already been at the back of the line for medical supplies in the pandemic. She said, "It will be worse if a vaccine is found. We can't afford to be in the back of the queue."
A recent incident at the border between India and China, high in the Himalaya Mountains, has fueled tensions between the world's two most populous countries. The Indian Army said at least 20 of its soldiers were killed in direct fighting with Chinese troops on Monday. The fighting took place in the Galwan area of Ladakh, an area in the western Himalayas. Indian and Chinese forces have been facing each other there since May. The incident appears to break an earlier agreement between the two countries. A deal signed in 1993 says neither country will use force at the line of actual control. That is what the effective border is called. The two sides have not officially agreed on a border. Instead, the two militaries hold positions. Disputes periodically break into gunfire. The disputed territory has sharp mountains and fast-flowing rivers. Most places are more than 4,000 meters above sea level. Some peaks are up to 7,700 meters high. Galwan is part of the 4,000-kilometer Himalayan border between the sides. Military experts say one reason for increased tensions is that India has been building roads and airfields to improve transportation links. India is trying to match the infrastructure on China's side. At Galwan, India completed a new road leading to an airfield. China objected to the additions. The area has long been a point of conflict between the two nations. The latest incident marked the first deadly clashes there since the two sides fought in 1967. Hundreds were killed then. China and India also fought a brief war in Ladakh in 1962. Today's line of actual control is based on the positions the militaries held after a ceasefire ended that war. But disputes remain because the territory is mountainous. The last major dispute happened in 2017 in the Doklam Plateau area, near the border of India, China, and Bhutan. Tensions eased after the two sides agreed to expeditious disengagement of troops, India's foreign ministry said. I'm Mario Ritter Jr.
Read or listen to part one of our program on comparisons of equality, you know that we can compare equal qualities and actions by using the word as. We can also compare equal quantities or amounts, and we will talk about that on today's Everyday Grammar program. Because of how we form equal comparisons, I will call them as comparisons. Suppose you are playing a card game with two friends. The goal is to have no cards remaining. You look and see that the other players each have the same number of cards. In English, there are a few ways to express an equal number or quantity between two things. One way is to make an as-as comparison. Here is what someone might say or write.
Ayami has as many cards as Zora.
Let's examine this sentence. There is a subject and verb. Notice also that the word as is used two times, and note where it is placed, before and after the thing being compared. The structure for comparisons of quantity goes like this: as plus many or much plus noun plus as. In the example, many is the quantity word and cards is the noun. You may recall that for countable nouns like cards, we use the word many. For uncountable nouns like money, we use the word much. Now, suppose you all are getting hungry. You want to order food to be delivered and want your friends to share in the cost. So you ask them how much money they each can spend, and they both can spend an equal amount. To express it with an as-as comparison, you could say this.
Ayami can spend as much money as Zora.
Notice that the word much is used with the noun money, because money is an uncountable noun.
Sometimes in these kinds of comparisons, native English speakers replace the noun with a pronoun. So instead of saying much money, they might use much as a pronoun. Here is what that sounds like.
Ayami can spend as much as Zora.
Use of the pronoun suggests the listener already knows that money is being discussed. So far, we have put people in the examples, but we can also make quantity comparisons between two things. Suppose you are looking for a table with a lot of style. You visit a furniture store and see two tables that seem equally stylish. Here is one way to express it.
This table has as much style as that table.
Here, you are comparing amounts of style, and style is an uncountable noun. We have talked about expressing equal quantities or amounts. But what happens when the quantities are not equal? In as-as comparisons, we use the negative form. Let's return to the card game example. Suppose your friends do not have the same number of cards. How could you express the unequal quantity?
Ayami does not have as many cards as Zora.
Now, let's hear the example about the friends' food budgets.
Ayami cannot spend as much money as Zora.
Most likely, a native English speaker would use the shortened version, can't. Here is how that would sound.
Ayami can't spend as much money as Zora.
Again, a native speaker might also replace money with just the pronoun much, like this.
Ayami can't spend as much as Zora.
Now, what about the tables? How could you say their style is not equal? Like this.
This table does not have as much style as that table.
By now, you might be thinking, but there are other ways to say things are equal or unequal. You are right. For example, you could use the word both, as in, Ayami and Zora can both spend $20. Or, to show an unequal amount, you could say, Zora can spend more than Ayami. So, why then do we use as-as comparisons? The answer is for emphasis. These comparisons bring emphasis to the fact that the first thing, which is the subject, is equal to or the same in some way to the second thing. Look and listen for these comparisons wherever English is being used. Ask yourself who or what is being compared. Then, think about whether it is a comparison of qualities, actions, or amounts. I'm Alice Bryant.
To help protect yourself against the new coronavirus, wash your hands for 20 seconds with soap and water before you eat, after using the toilet, and after touching anything many other people touch, like a seat on a public bus. If you cannot wash your hands with soap and water, use an alcohol-based hand sanitizer that contains at least 60% alcohol. Taking these steps can help prevent not only the new coronavirus disease, but also colds, flu, and other viruses. For more information, visit the following websites: the World Health Organization at www.who.int or the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention at www.cdc.gov.
VOA Learning English presents America's Presidents. Today we are talking about George Washington. He was the first president of the United States,
He served from 1789 to 1797. But he had many other accomplishments, too. He owned thousands of hectares of land in his home state of Virginia. He was a famous general who led the American colonists to freedom from British rule, and he presided over the convention that created the U.S. Constitution. For Washington, that was enough. He said he wanted to retire from public service and return home. But the country's new electors had other ideas. They wanted him to move to New York and invent the American presidency. Washington accepted the job as his duty. Washington was sworn in as president in 1789. At the time, a truly United States was still just an idea. Americans were unconnected groups. They came from different countries, had different religions, and spoke different languages. For example, a quarter of the people in the state of Pennsylvania spoke only German. Doug Bradburn is the founding director of the Washington Library at Mount Vernon. He says, when Washington took office, the country was fragile.
The chances that it would even survive were probably very, very slim.
Bradburn explains that Washington had to establish social and political unity. But the Constitution did not say how the president could do that. So, Bradburn says, Washington invented the job for all future presidents. He established a group of advisors called the Cabinet, as well as the nation's official money. He appointed a 6-member Supreme Court, and he created the Department of Foreign Affairs, now called the State Department. However, Washington said it was the president's responsibility to set foreign policy. Historian Doug Bradburn explains that Washington established the president not just as a figurehead, but as a decision maker. But he always used the Constitution as his guide.
He wasn't just trying to establish an office and then figure out a way to justify it. He was trying to work with his Constitution.
George Washington was born in 1732 in the colony of Virginia. His father died when George was 11 years old. As a boy, he learned reading, writing, and math. Then he worked as a land surveyor in western Virginia. Historian Joseph Ellis points out that Washington did not have a formal education. Instead of going to college, Ellis says, Washington went to war. He fought against the French and Indians as a British army officer. That experience informed Washington's worldview. Ellis describes the first president as a realist. At the same time, Washington was a very passionate man with extremely strong emotions. He was known to get angry, but he showed his temper to only a few people. Washington not only acted like a great leader, he looked like one. George Washington stood about 1.9 meters tall. That was a head taller than the average man of his time. He was very strong and very graceful. He was known as one of the best horseback riders and best dancers in Virginia. But he had a problem: bad teeth. Unlike his wife, Martha, who was known for her lovely smile, George Washington began losing his teeth in his 20s. When he was sworn in as president, he had only one tooth left. Washington remains an important figure in the American imagination. Even today, people tell stories about him. One popular story, that he had wooden teeth, is not true. But he did wear dentures. They were made, in part, from hippopotamus ivory. And he did not chop down a cherry tree as a child, and then admit it by saying, "I cannot tell a lie." In fact, historian Joseph Ellis says, Washington lied many times. But it is true that as Washington became more famous, his reputation grew. People thought of him as a man who always did the right thing. Joseph Ellis says even Washington understood people would look at his writings and judge him.
Washington went from being a man to a monument. He was aware of the fact that he had a role to play and that all emerging nations need mythical heroes.
Washington became very protective of his personal thoughts. His wife burned most of their letters. Yet, we know a little bit about Washington's thoughts from other writing. One of his regrets, he said, was that he had not done something to end slavery. Like many plantation owners, Washington was a slaveholder. More than 300 enslaved people lived on his property. By the end of his life, Washington opposed slavery. He left a will ordering his survivors to free his slaves after his wife's death. Washington's will became relevant sooner than he might have liked. 3 years after he finished his second term as president, Washington fell ill. He had been outside riding his horse on a cold, wet day. When he came home, he complained of a sore throat. Over the next 2 days, his condition became worse. On December 14, 1799, he died in his bed, surrounded by his wife, enslaved maids, and friends. He was 67. Historian Joseph Ellis says one of the best things about George Washington was his ability to give up power. At the end of the Revolutionary War, General Washington surrendered his sword. And at the end of his administration, President Washington simply returned home.
You could trust Washington with power because he was so conspicuously willing to give it up.
Doug Bradburn says Washington was the right man at the right time. Bradburn, like many historians, calls George Washington the indispensable man. In other words, Washington was essential to the American experiment in self-government. He made ideas about American freedom real, and he showed that even the president would operate under the rule of law. I'm Kelly Jean Kelly.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.